Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, November 17th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Heather Parton, or Digby, as you may know her, will be here with us today. Also on the program, Judy Gold, or Judy, as you may know her, will be here on the program today. Meanwhile, Senate vote on the stunning Republican tax bill draws near. Roy Moore, defiant, seems to be cratering in the polls. Calls for Al Franken's resignation grow. Trump's Panamanian properties found to be a hotbed of money laundering. Surprise, surprise. And the FCC on a rampage. Net neutrality is next. Elections have consequences. Blue slips are now gone. Dems have no way to stop Trump judges. Federalist Society offers Trump a court packing scheme. And Menendez jury deadlock. He will walk in New Jersey. And this is a lovely story of a Keystone pipeline which spilled 210,000 gallons of oil the other day on the eve of Nebraska determining whether or not they're going to okay the permit for the pipeline to go through Nebraska. Who wants to bet on how that's going to turn out? All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get into this in a moment. Got some feedback from yesterday, and I don't know, people took issue with Janine's points on how much time I think she feels the media is spending on issues that are, I think she thought, somewhat subsidiary. And I, you know, the people can take issue with that, but I just want to remind people too that Janine's bona fides and views on just basically the media writ large were born out of her time really involved in advocating against the war in this country at a time where, and I don't know if people fully appreciate this. I mean, I think people obviously closer to my age do. But in 2002, there was no internet in any meaningful way in terms of delivering opinion, dissent. You could send emails, you could call up on the phone and wait and wait and wait for a website to load. But there was no radio, there was no YouTube, there was no Huffington Post, or there was basically, you know, Joe Connison and the Observer. That's what it was.
Yeah,
That's all there was. And there were literally four people in the country who were allowed to go on television and express dissent against the war. And you guys don't even know who the other people were, because I can barely remember who they were. The guy who played BJ on MASH. But the most prominent who was allowed to go on television, which was the only, I mean, you couldn't go on right-wing radio, although I think she was brought on, was Janine. She did so in an era where comedians, I mean, today it's very easy to see comedians being political. No comedians were political then. None. Barry Crimmins. No one else. None of the people who are political today, not only did they not usher a political word at that time, from the stage, from their platform, Janine got a tremendous amount of shit from her peers and her management, and I know this because I was often the one who was told to deliver it at times. Why are you doing this? Why are you going out buying a whole new wardrobe so that when you go on to Fox or CNN or MSNBC, which, you know, Donahue was fired prior to the war, and they put you up against a PhD from, I don't know, the whatever it was, foundation, Americans for America Foundation, and they start to mock you for coming on as an actress. How dare you, even though they begged her to come on, and even though she was the literally the only person who was allowed to go on TV and express a view, a dissenting against going into Iraq. And you're hard-pressed to find anybody who put that much personal risk. I mean, there was a reason why, when she mentioned the bats the other day, yesterday on the show, was because regularly men would get out of their cars in the middle of New York City when they would see her walking and go up to her and berate her and threaten her. And she was mocked by, you know, Trey Parker and Stone in their movie for being against the Iraq war. I think they blew her up. Literally blew her up in their movie. This is the... People don't remember that the Dixie Chicks made one comment and their albums were burned. And so I think to a large extent, you know, many of her perspectives on this were sort of born out of that experience. And so I think she has a particular sensitivity to, seeing a narrative being going in one direction or another. You can check it out for yourself on our feed, on our podcast. The timing was bad because I was hoping for one of our classic Thanksgiving jamboree shows. And, of course, the story about Al Franken came out. What are you going to do? Meanwhile, we're getting more information on the Senate tax bill. The House version's no great shakes either. I think this bill is going to pass, but I guess it remains to be seen. And certainly, Al Franken has now been neutralized as a prominent voice fighting against this tax bill. Apparently, Dave Weigel had a piece about this very question. And when Franken's name was on the end of a fundraising appeal, it was the most successful appeal of any senator in the caucus. Any senator in the caucus. for what that's worth. He also obviously was a very good spokesperson to go out, and we're not going to see much more of that, regardless of what happens with his future in the Senate. We will talk more about that with Digby. But first, let's play this clip of Sherrod Brown and Orrin Hatch debating taxes. Let me just give you a couple of highlights here about the tax bill. We'll talk more about it with Digby. But your student loans are no longer interest no longer deductible on the student loans. Your major medical expenses, no longer deductible. If you are a PhD student, I mean, this is almost hilarious, but you're going to be taxed at a rate that is almost three times what your earnings are. In other words, it's going to project out your earnings as being three times what they actually are to tax you, because now if you get a waiver on your tuition, that will be taxable. Meanwhile, if you're Ivanka Trump, you're going to get $1 billion without having to pay a dollar on tax of it. Assuming your dad dies, let's say, 6 years out from now. So here is, and these are among other provisions, of course, we'll talk more about it, but here is Sherrod Brown going at it with Orrin Hatch. And here's Orrin Hatch, who's just so tired of having the reality of the Republican tax plan shoved back into his face, that he's going to whine about it. It is so tough for an old white guy to get a break in this society.
Groups will run, will of course say, Senator McCaskill and Senator Casey and Senator Stabenow and Senator Nelson are voting against a $4,000 raise that this tax cut is going to bestow on them. We know it's coming. We know you'll have way more money to promote that than we will have to defend it, but that's why the Wyden Amendment's so important. And I just think it would be nice just tonight, before we go home, to just acknowledge, well, this tax cut really is not for the middle class, it's for the rich. And that whole thing about higher wages, well, it's a good selling point, but we know companies don't just give away higher wages. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money.
In fact, not only do we not know this, but Gary Cohn, one of the president's top economic advisors, just learned this lesson the other day. We played the video of it when he was in a room full of CEOs and was saying, who here is going to put the tax cuts back into capital investment? And no, he raised their hand, because they're all going to put it into stock buybacks and shareholders. We're going to keep the money. Thank you.
Thank you. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money now. They're sitting on a lot of profits now. I don't see wages going up. So just spare us the bank shots, spare us the sarcasm and the satire, and let's move.
I'm going to spare it, but I'm going to just say to you that I come from the poor people, and I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes
it. Just, I'm not through. Okay. I get kind of sick and tired of it. Now, true, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular
in
order,
the country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
Richer.
Order.
Regular middle. We do a tax
cut. Regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute. Regular order.
And over and over again.
Wait,
how many times do we do this before we learn this?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. And let me just say something. If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too. And I think I've got a reputation of having worked together with Democrats.
Let's start with Chip.
Not starting with Chip. I've done it for years. I've got more bills.
Start with Chip today.
I got more bills passed than everybody on this committee put together. And they've been passed for the benefit of people in this country. Now, all I can say is I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bullcrap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right. And it takes a lot to get me worked up like this.
Call the roll.
Oh, it certainly does. Just a FYI. Oh, gosh, man. Orrin Hatch has had a good couple of years here. His estimated net worth is up around $5 million these days. But I imagine with the market going through the roof, this guy's probably doing...
We had nothing.
Let's see.
We had a raincoat.
What do we got? Well, oh!
Soup.
Top assets in 2016, Orrin G. Hatch and something, $3 million. He's got an estimated net worth of about $4.5 million in 2016.
Middle class, in the sense that I'm in the middle of the Senate.
Yeah, it's a sweet tie. Anyways, they're getting absolutely sick of this bull crap.
Triggered much?
Indeed. But this is
a very snowflake moment.
This is basically going to be the big fight, and I don't know. We will we'll have a better sense of how it's going to go. But first, we're going to take a break and talk to Digby. Oh, folks, just a reminder. A couple of things I want to tell you about this. We usually do the Just Co-op, JustCoffee.coop plug at the end of the show, but they have a special promotion going on until December 15th for Majority Report listeners. Use the coupon code MRHOLIDAY and get, are you ready for this? 30% off. It's crazy. It's sick. There's a sickness.
It's a disgusting deal.
Let me tell you something. If you've never tried Just Coffee, this is the time to do it. You get about 2.5 weeks now. This is going to be a great Christmas gift. Of course, you can also buy the Majority Report blend. Double up on your Christmas or Hanukkah gift or your, your solstice gift or Kwanzaa, whatever you want.
Ramadan
fast break. I don't think you can have coffee
after you're done when it's dark out.
Okay. Majority Report blend, 30% off. Go to justcoffee.coop, justcoffee.coop. Also, majority survey. We're just going to have the survey up for another couple of days before we get to Thanksgiving. MajoritySurvey.com. Be right back. Talk to Digby.
You never grow up and you never can see the world's coming.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to this program Heather Parton. You may know her as Digby from the Uber blog, Hullabaloo. Hello, Heather.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. A lot of news. Obviously, the Franken stuff, pretty disturbing / discouraging, upsetting, all of that. But we will get to that in a moment. We just played a clip of Sherrod Brown and Orrin Hatch, who is just so offended. You can't believe how offended this guy was that Sherrod Brown would claim that this tax cut is for the wealthy. And this is really basically the big story right now is what's going to happen with this tax plan, and what's going to happen in the Senate. I mean, I don't know what your sense is, but from your perspective, what's the most egregious part of it?
Oh my God. Well, look, the estate tax rollback to me, and in fact, I don't even understand why we're not calling it, you know, Ivanka's law, because really this is who it's for. And the idea that I listened to that piece with Orrin Hatch and Sherrod Brown, and, you know, Sherrod Brown was very good, I thought, in that clip, by the way. I was very impressed with the way that he sort of framed this whole thing. And the fact that he got under Orrin Hatch's collar, I think, is sort of a sign that they have a little problem. He was a little triggered by that. You know, to me, I mean, obviously, there are a bunch of things. You know, Tom Cotton, who also known as Norman Bates, came in at the last minute and threw in this Obamacare repeal part. Apparently, he's behind that. He's sort of the new Ted Cruz of this particular Congress. You know, the whole thing. I mean, there's really nothing in it that you can recommend. It's going to end up, I mean, every new analysis that they do with this plan shows that more and more middle class and poor people are going to be paying more, and it's going to benefit more and more wealthy corporations and, you know, wealthy individuals. And you know, I mean, I think that you mentioned this earlier, that the most telling moment in everything was this, their underlying and always their fundamental argument for these massive tax cuts for wealthy people is always that it's going to spur investment and make the economy grow, and we'll all be, you know, it's trickle-down economics, right, essentially. And Gary Cohn was giving a speech to a bunch of CEOs and said, you know, how many of you are going to take this money and invest? And, you know, two people put their hands up. And he was shocked and stunned to find that they were not going to do it. And they're not. They don't make business decisions based on that. Oh, goody, we've got a little extra money. Let's hire some workers. I mean, that's just not how any of this works. It's not how any of this works. It's never been how any of this works. And, you know, sometimes you can stimulate the economy when there's some kind of a credit crunch, or you're in a financial crisis. Even that, you know, just cutting taxes is rarely enough to really, you know, quote, you know, prime the pump in these situations, although, you know, maybe it can loosen up some money. But for the most part, it is just not a very good way to do it, and it doesn't work that way. There's a reason why these companies are not investing, and it's not because they don't have the money. I mean, that's just not, look at the stock market. I mean, I don't even understand how people can make that argument at this moment, that companies are really in need of money. It's just not the way it works. So, you know, this whole thing is just, it's an opportunistic, you know, kind of race to get this thing done, because it's the only thing they really care about. It's their religion is tax cutting. And I think that they feel that if they can't do this, I mean, Paul Ryan said it explicitly, if we can't do this, what good are we?
Right.
And that really is, I mean, that is their reason for existing in a political sense. And I just, you know, I think that they're racing ahead. And I think one of the things that's most surprising to me about this is that it's so badly designed that, you know, they didn't have this thing ready to go. You know, I mean, they didn't even have tax cuts.
You know what's amazing? Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, I remember in November of last year reading an interview with Paul Ryan, where he was, where the whole gist of it was like, we've been waiting for this. Like, we knew that even if it didn't happen, we are going to have everything, you know, in the barrel. Do you remember that piece?
I mean, yeah, it's a dream of a lifetime.
And
yeah.
It was like, we've got all the bullets in the chain, you know, ready to load into the chambers. And this thing is such a mess. Like, I suppose there's somebody sitting there going like, oh, I know what we, you know, one of the longstanding Republican principles, and this is going to be great politically, is to make the health expenses non-deductible now, tuition or loans, college loans not deductible, or this tuition thing, the amazing thing is that look, I am not as concerned about the deficit as I think is sort of like the mainstream of political where the political ballast is in this country. But my fear about the deficit is only that it's going to be used as a way of cutting more things later because frankly, Democrats have sort of bought into this in the past. But I mean, the idea, and this is it, the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation, which is basically the CBO for taxes, projected on Thursday that Americans earning $30,000 or less would see their taxes increase as a group beginning in 2021. Americans earning $75,000 or less would face large tax increases in 2027. Not to mention, I guess, you know, and we can talk about this in a minute, the blue-red state divide. But that's amazing to me. Like, you know, the idea of like lowered taxes for everybody, and they can't even get it together to lower taxes for everybody. Never mind on people who don't need it. Like, yes, we have a huge wealth inequality problem with the estate taxes. Like, I think we should be taxing everything over $10 million at like 90 cents on the dollar. But you would think at least they would deliver tax cuts for everybody as we make it palatable, but they don't even seem to care about that.
Well, you remember that old saying that James Baker, the guy from Texas who was the Ronald Reagan's chief of staff and worked for the Bushes.
He said the Jews won't vote for us anyway.
The Jews, they don't vote for us anyway.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's what we're dealing with here. You know, they had their constituency is, you know, in their view, the only important constituency are these wealthy donors. They've been saying it out loud. I mean, that's another thing I can't believe. You've got actual reports of people telling the press, look, there's nothing I can do. My donors are demanding it. They're saying I've got to pass this thing. And I'm going, seriously, you're using that as an excuse. Okay, well, we're not, you know, I guess it's honest. If nothing else, you're telling the media exactly what's going on. And I suspect that that's true. I mean, I think that their donors, these Republican donors, their wealthy benefactors, can see the handwriting on the wall. And they see this, that, you know, they have elected a cretinous effing moron to be the president, and that it's going to be a short-lived majority that they have in both houses. And so they're saying, look, you know, this is what we pay you for. Get in there and get this thing done. And for a lot of them, I think they genuinely want to do it. They actually believe they've been indoctrinated into this idea that tax cuts are great. I mean, listen to Orrin Hatch. I mean, Orrin Hatch certainly should understand that this is, you know, that this is a bad plan. Let's just put it that way. I mean, let's just forget the religious dogma underneath the whole thing. But he should know. He's been around the Senate since, I don't know, the 1800s practically. He should know that this is a bad plan. The numbers don't add up. Nothing about it actually works as a piece of legislation. It's terrible. And the one in the Senate is not going to be any better than the one in the House. And no, they're not going to, you know, knock out the changes in the conference. I mean, that all of that, when you look at this particular Congress, it's obvious they have no clue how to do this. I don't know when it happened that Republicans lost the actual, you know, technical ability to put together a piece of legislation, but somewhere along the line they obviously did. And, you know, I guess I thought maybe they outsourced this stuff. Now, where's the Heritage Foundation? You know, I mean, don't they have some wonk sitting with green eye shades who could have put this thing together? But they don't. So here we are, and I just think that this is just a missionary
right.
kind of operation that they just, you know, they're just putting their heads down and hacking their way through the jungle because they just, you know, they've got to do this for the Lord. I mean, it's just, it makes absolutely no sense. And I have a hard time believing that they think this is going to, that they really deep down think this is going to benefit them politically. I think some of this is just, they're committing suicide and they know it.
I think that's a great point in terms of just about their technical competence, because certainly, you know, back in the day of Tom DeLay, they were just as mean-spirited and interested in enriching the wealthy over the rest of us. But they knew how to write a piece of legislation. They knew how to count, you know, get a whip count. And I do think to a certain extent that we've seen the ascendance of the conservative movement, which rewards their entire reward structure internally. You know, who makes the money are the sort of like the Breitbarts. I mean, you know, people forget that Breitbart himself cared nothing about policy, bragged that he didn't care about policy. He didn't care about any of it. It was all a cultural war, and it was really just about winning in the context of the media. And, you know, they have moved so far in that direction that there doesn't seem to be any incentive structure for anybody to actually do any, you know, even like, I don't know, evil work. Well, like we played a clip of, in charge of one EPA committee. And she was refuting, I can't remember the details, she was refuting climate change, or she was talking about how much, she was with Sheldon Whitehouse, and Sheldon Whitehouse was asking her about, like, do you have any idea how much heat is trapped in the ocean? Like, how much scientists say this? And scientists say it's like over 90%, right, or something, the excess heat is trapped in the ocean. And she didn't know she didn't even seem to know what he was referring to. And it's like, there used to be a time when people who would deny climate science or deny like evolution or whatever it was would at least do enough work so they could actually refute, you know, like have an argument and know what was going to be brought up. They just seemed to just sort of show up and like, oh, whatever. I mean, she was actually, she seemed to be tentative because she wasn't even sure which lie she should tell, which reinforced her climate denialism. Like, she was so clueless even about her own arguments. And I mean, I think that's at play here. And just in terms of like the political, I guess, value, I am concerned. I don't know. I'm annoyed at the prospect of what we're going to see if they pass this tax bill, which is they got something done. And that's really important to the American public, which I don't think is the case. I just don't think that's going to have any impact one way or another politically, but it's going to be the narrative for a while.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also, by the way, reinforced by the media, which seems to be
exactly.
For reasons I do not understand. You know, I mean, well, I guess they're just, you know, trying to be fair and balanced. But this idea that somehow or another that really matters, that people really care, that they, quote, get something done, and that tax cuts are somehow the magic elixir. I mean, it's like the media sort of bought into this idea too. Ooh, you know, if they can pass tax cuts, they're masters of the Senate, and they'll prove that they can actually do something, and that will turn things around for them. I mean, I don't know what evidence there is. I'm sure that the base, the people who still love Donald Trump, the 35%, will say that when they make their pilgrimages out to, you know, whatever Johnstown or whatever, you know, places where this cult lives, and ask them, and they'll say, oh yeah, you got the tax cut passed. That's just terrific. But other than that, nobody else is going to, I mean, tax cuts are a weird abstraction, right? I mean, that's not something that people actually care about. I mean, if they wanted to actually do something, you would think that they would have found something that would have an immediate effect on people's lives and say, look at what we've done, you know, isn't this terrific? But, you know, of course, they don't really have anything like that. I mean, their whole philosophy is, you know, tax cuts uber alles, and that's really all they care about. But, you know, or repealing Obamacare, which thank God they were so far unable to at least do completely. But this is, you know, this is something that's sort of being touted as a big achievement, something that really, really matters. And golly, you know, everything's going to be great. The Republicans will be making a comeback. I mean, just wait until, if they actually do pass this monstrosity, what the press is going to say. You know, Trump will have become president that day.
Right.
Paul Ryan's genius. You know, Mitch McConnell is a master of the Senate, blah, blah, blah. When in truth, if they get this thing through, it's basically by the skin of their teeth, and it's an atrocity of a piece of legislation that doesn't make any sense, that doesn't add up, that's going to absolutely explode in a hundred different ways over time if it actually passes, because they haven't, it's a terrible, even on its own merits, it's a terrible piece of legislation. It doesn't even make sense on its own terms, much less make sense as legislation that will actually benefit the country. So, you know, this is just an absolute, you know, it's a disgrace that we've gotten to this point. And, you know, now we're once again going to be sitting there going, gee, what will Lisa Murkowski do? I mean, I heard today, I don't know if this is going to happen, but she says that, you know, if they don't pass Alexander Murray as part, you know, the Obamacare fix, as part of this tax legislation, that she won't vote for the legislation with the, you know, removal of the mandate. And I don't have the competence to know whether or not that's a good exchange. But this is the kind of stuff we're going to go through here, you know. So we're counting on her. We're counting on Collins. We're counting on Rand Paul being a complete, you know, zealot on the other side, and people, deficit hawks, you know, maybe Bob Corker or Jeff Flake or somebody like that. I mean, this
is Ron Johnson still pretending that he has an issue with it, or is
has he gotten the piece
in the Wisconsin Journal that he needed and now can now safely vote for it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the last I heard, he's still kind of strutting around confused about what it is exactly that he has a problem with. But I'm sure he's gonna, somehow or another, they're gonna get Ron Johnson back on board by hook or by crook. Yeah, this whole thing, it's a joke, that the whole kabuki dance that they do around this. And you know, we'll be sitting here probably on Christmas Eve, waiting for them to figure out whether or not, you know, they're going to destroy the economy. And, you know, it'll depend on a small handful of Republican senators who are also playing a game, by the way, you know, running around and, you know, acting like they might do it, even though we know that, you know, at least a few of them have said no. And the whole thing is just, it's ridiculous. And thank, you know, let's hope that that's what happens. I mean, I'm you know, go Lisa, you know, whatever you
right.
can do, Lisa Murkowski, God, you know, God bless you, because they're all we've got.
Well, now, let me ask you this. There are at least a half a dozen California lawmakers, House members. There, I think there's 11 in total, but there's at least a half a dozen who are within, like, you know, sitting in districts that are either like Democratic plus districts or just, you know, Republican plus three districts in the way that they measure the partisan index. What are they thinking about? Because there, I mean, one aspect of this is that the House bill will raise personal taxes on Californians and New Yorkers by a combined $16 billion in 2027. Now, this is going to be fair, this is going to hit mostly wealthy people, because they're not going to be able to deduct, and they're the ones who have been deducting their state and local taxes off their federal taxes. But it is a raise in taxes for those donors, I guess, theoretically, right, in New York and California. And meanwhile, it cuts taxes on Texans and Floridians by more than $30 billion. How do people in California survive? I mean, I see a couple of New Yorkers who voted for the Catco up, I think, like in Buffalo, and another one in the 22nd district. But I know that like in the 19th, John Faso, he's a no. What's going on with those California lawmakers? Are they just basically saying like swan song? Maybe
I think so. I mean, there's no other explanation for it. Look, I mean, California is the heart of blue America. It, you know, voted for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump by something like 3 million votes. I mean, it is. The vast majority of the congressional delegation are Democrats. The entire state is run by the Democratic Party at this point. There is absolutely no logic to them doing it. Now, my assumption is that Kevin McCarthy, who is the majority leader, who's also from California, that he twisted some arms and got, he's the big fundraiser for a lot of these people. So, you know, maybe that was just it. The other side is that, and I honestly think this is true, that for some of these people, they're looking at the polls. I mean, some of the polling has the generic ballot with Democrats up 15 points. That's unheard of. That's 1994 style wave, right?
Right.
I mean, that is major wave if that holds up. I mean, I'm not counting my chickens. I understand that, you know, we have to be cautious. I will never make predictions again. But if you are a politician and you're looking at your future, you have to look at polling, right? I mean, you'd have to be looking at this. These guys, in my view, many of them are just saying, I am toast. I'm from California. I'm a Republican. I'm gone. And they're looking out for their future in this. And I would not be surprised with the way that Washington is blatantly corrupt at the moment. I mean, we have the president selling the presidency out of the White House, essentially. They're making deals. They're, hey, you know, I'll vote for it, dude. You know, you got a place for me at, wherever.
And it doesn't even
whatever
have to be
your company is.
To be clear, it doesn't even have to be a quid pro quo. It's just signaling, like, I'm your kind of guy
or gal.
Your kind of guy. And when I get out of Congress, I'm going to be the type of person who's going to go back to my former colleagues, all from outside of the state of California. And I'm going to get the next thing you want through, essentially.
Right. You know, and they can all be, you know, they can be looking at their future, recognizing where this is going and saying, you know, this is my last chance to really deliver and I'm going to do it. And in the end, you know, I will benefit. I honestly believe that that is part of the calculation here because it is completely illogical for these California Republicans to be willing to throw themselves on the pyre for these stupid tax cuts that are going to be used against, there's absolutely no way that most of these guys will survive this in this state. I mean, I honestly do not see how it happens. I grant you, you know, some of them are from districts where maybe, you know, they can get away with it or they think they might be able to get away with it, but I don't think they will. They're going to have this tied around their necks. And it's not just that. I mean, it's the whole Trump agenda they were fighting already. And now this thing where they've got an actual vote, it's on the record that is, you know, there will be headlines splashed all over the place about how this absolutely was pretty much designed to screw California, to screw the big blue states in order to, you know, give money to Trump's constituents elsewhere. And that's how it's going to be framed, and they're in trouble. So, you know, I don't, you know, maybe Kevin McCarthy, who has always struck me as being kind of a, you know, adult, but apparently he's really good at fundraising, which is why he's the majority leader.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he just had some, you know, an argument for these guys that made sense. But yeah, it's a grave disappointment to me, although in 2018, we may have the largest Democratic caucus in the Congress, because I think they're gone. I think they're dead meat, and I think we're going to have almost 100% Democrats in Washington.
Well, I mean, sadly, they're not going to be able to pass any legislation. I mean, that's the that's going to be an upshot, I guess. There'll be fun investigations. But, you know, I mean, I just this notion. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but I mean, I look at some of these provisions. Like, you could be you could be making $30,000 a year as a PhD student, $20,000 to $30,000 a year as a stipend, and your taxes are going to go up by $10,000. Like, this is
impossible, right?
Yeah, it's going to wipe out an entire sort of like segment of our educational system. And when you contemplate that, I don't know how many PhD students there are in this country, but I would guess that if you were to add up $10,000 for every PhD student in this country, it would basically equal what Ivanka Trump stands to gain from this tax cut, from the state. Like, literally, like, you know, I don't know, maybe she's going to make $1 billion off this, this rollback on the estate tax. And I think I would imagine, I don't even have the ability to do the numbers here. I don't, math I won't do, but I think that you could possibly wipe out just about every PhD student in the country to pay for Ivanka Trump's tax benefit on this. It's insane. It's insane. And
I think it's a feature, not a bug, don't you? I mean, this is an attack on higher education. PhD students do much of the teaching, right? I mean, yep. They're the teachers. So, you know, these PhD candidates who are doing their work, and they do a lot of research. They, you know, they're people who, you know, they do a lot of work in the educational system. And basically what they want to do is starve the system of these people, because they are elites who are creating, you know, elite knowledge that, you know, like, science.
Alchemy.
You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think that, I mean, maybe I sound, you know, like I'm being hyperbolic there, but I think this is, they did this consciously. This is a group of people. Look, I mean, if you look at all the, you know, if you look in right-wing media, which is where, you know, half the Congress comes from now, they think of college campuses as this cauldron of, you know, liberal craziness. They've got to stop it. You know, they've got to do something to stop these people from indoctrinating the country in their liberal ways. And I could easily see somebody, you know, some guy like Jim Jordan sitting there in some meeting going, yeah, you know, let's put an end to this.
Right.
We'll just do this. And I think that's part of the deal here. I mean, it's horrifying. You know, universities are going to be in deep, deep trouble because it's unaffordable. I mean, if it passes as it was designed, PhD students, they literally just can't do it. They don't have the money. You know, they will not be able to live and pursue their educations. They can't do it. And so this is going to be, it will be devastating for higher education, for everybody, not just for them, but for all the kids that they teach. And, you know, like I said, I think that's the design here. Keep the kids away from those college campuses. You know, college is a bad thing. And, of course, now we worship people who don't go to college. They are the avatar of what a real American is. The days when you thought you wanted your kids to do better than you, those are gone. Now we worship people who say, you know, I want my kids to live just like my granddad did. You know, I mean, we don't want them to do
right.
any better.
No, no FDA regulations and no minimum wage or child worker rules.
Making America great again, Sam.
All right. Well, Digby, let's talk about, the only thing that happened this week in terms of I guess maybe there was a lot that happened in terms of more. And you know, I find myself sort of like, okay, compartmentalizing the Moore and Al Franken as if they were, at least based upon what we know at this point, even remotely comparable. But I don't know. I'm curious as your take on Franken. There has been calls for him to resign. There's been other pieces that I've read that are suggest no. I mean, I think Michelle Goldberg wrote that Franken should go, and the argument seems to be if the Democrats want to be taken seriously on this issue, they have to. Basically, I guess, discipline themselves, and perhaps the question is of, you know, how much of a liability is he now? I also read another piece by a woman, Kate Harding, who is she writes in the Post, "I'm a feminist. I study rape culture. I don't want Al Franken to resign, basically because." I think, as she put it, like the Democratic Party is no more and no less than better than the Republicans, and in terms of these issues, and so I don't know where what's your perspective on this?
Well, personally, I don't think that what Franken is accused of doing is of the same level, same caliber as what Roy Moore is accused of doing, or more pertinently, what Donald Trump is accused of doing. He's the president of the United States, and he was accused of very similar behavior, if not worse, with, you know, almost 20 people who said that he'd been doing this very thing that Al Franken is accused of over the course of many, many years, and attacking strangers, not just, you know, not necessarily some person that he was working with on the set, say, which would be, you know, the same. So, I'm finding it really hard to find any consistency in this. And I feel as if, you know, I would imagine if we look at what's happened over the past couple of months since the Weinstein story broke, that we're going to find other Democrats who right. have committed some form of sexual harassment over the course of their careers, or perhaps, as in this case, with Franken, it happened before he became a senator. But, you know, Roy Moore, it all happened before he became the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court.
Right, he was
too.
Just a DA at that time.
Yeah. I suspect this isn't going to be the last that we see of this. We don't have a process, really, for dealing with this stuff other than just sort of a sense that, and we haven't seen anybody be falsely accused as of yet. So, there's an idea that this is an epidemic in our culture. I believe it is. And this is just a sense of the culture itself, the backlash against it, and it's kind of taking its course. And Franken now is the first of a Democratic side, although, you know, Bill Clinton was caught up in this too 20 years ago. To me, the idea that we jump to the conclusion that he has to resign feels premature. I'm a big believer in due process. I think that, you know, it would be right for him to go through an ethics investigation. On the other hand, I am somewhat persuaded by Michelle Goldberg's point that there's nothing to be gained by that. Even in terms of what Kate Harding said in her piece, that, you know, Democrats are better than Republicans when it comes to women's rights. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And the reason is because Franken, if he did resign, he would be replaced by a Democrat, presumably someone who will be equally good on women's issues. This idea of an equivalence between the two parties would at least be somewhat allayed by right. his resignation. I hate the idea. I mean, I love Al Franken as a senator. I don't care anything. I don't know him as a person. I don't have no idea what he's like. But as a senator, I think he's been a good senator. But, you know, so what? It's like, you know, and in this atmosphere, I'm just not sure that there's anything to be gained by saying that he should stay.
Right.
I don't see how that works. Now, if I were Franken and I was in his position, I would stand up and say, I am willing to resign when Donald Trump resigns. he is accused of exactly the same thing, and I will take the heat for that, and I apologize for it. And when he says that he will resign along with me, the two of us will go on the same day, I'll go with him. Because the fact that we have the President of the United States sitting in there, and by the way, in the middle of the night last night, he's tweeting about Al Franken and how disgusting he is. And I mean, I can hardly believe it. I can hardly believe that he did it. I mean, it just shows that he's got his mental illness.
Do you think anybody's going to remember about my stuff? No, I'm just going to.
Well, what are you going to do about it, huh? There's no ethics investigation that can go after me. I'm the president. You know, right. The president does it. It's not illegal. I mean, it was absolutely disgusting, but he couldn't help himself. He was watching Hannity, and Hannity was also, you know, offering this, you know, lugubrious kind of unctuous, you know, condemnation of Al Franken, the guy who's been defending Roy Moore, who, you know, I mean, his
Well,
crime.
To be fair, let's be clear. Hannity defended Roy Moore, then gave him a 24-hour deadline to answer his methodical and specific questions that he had. And then he got a call from Steve Bannon and decided that the calls were all answered, apparently. It's being reported now that Rebecca Berg at CNN reports that Steve Bannon called Hannity following his Tuesday night ultimatum and urged him to dial it back. And then, of course, the next day, all the questions were answered because only two more women came out in those 24 hours.
Just two. I mean, it's getting fewer. It's down to a trickle.
One of whom had to say the words, I can't talk now. I'm in trigonometry class. To the DA.
I've got a pop quiz. I can't really talk.
Insane. But
I know it's totally insane, and I honestly think that look, you know, this is it's very tough. This is an ugly situation all the way around. I worry about Franken in another sense, in that, you know, he was in counterculture comedy in the 70s and 80s. He worked at Saturday Night Live. That place was by all accounts an absolute cauldron of sexual misconduct.
Right.
And he has said and done things over the years that I'm sure are going to be, you know, dragged out. I don't know if he's harassed women. I don't have any knowledge of that. But I know the world that he was living in, the profession.
I'd be surprised if there weren't more like the equivalent of those pictures. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff. And there is stuff out there about things that he has said. There's a Playboy interview that he said some really, you know, grotesque kind of made some rape jokes and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not proof of anything, but I'm just saying that this is a guy. And in fact, I had an argument with some friends of mine over this, that they were saying, oh, he should run for president in 2020. And, you know, on the political level, I would be all for it. He's great. And I enjoy watching him as well. I thought he would be a good foil for Donald Trump, but I'm going, you know, come on guys, this guy, you know, he was a comedian in the 70s and 80s. There, it's just someone with that particular past. I just don't think, you know, we're in kind of an era here where that kind of stuff is just not going to fly. So I'm not surprised. And I do think that's something that, you know, there is some evidence in the Franken thing that this was at least somewhat ginned up by certain right-wing factors like Roger Stone, who tweeted out about it before it happened. And the accuser is, you know, she's not that this has anything to do with whether or not she was sexually harassed, but she is a very political person who appeared on Sean Hannity's shows dozens of times. And, you know, has her political affiliation is clearly, you know, she's a Trump person. So let's just say that I would be, you know, surprised that they haven't gathered more information, let me just put it that way, of the type that we're talking about. Not evidence of sexual harassment, that may or may not exist, but I mean just this kind of creepy stuff that you know wouldn't be too hard to find, let's put it that way.
Right.
So you know, this may to me, the minute I heard it, I thought that ship had sailed, and I thought that Franken was over, and I thought that he would probably resign and that he would be replaced. I may be wrong in that, but that was just my instantaneous sort of analysis, you know, which was just, this is, it's a picture, they got him, and, you know, he shouldn't have done that. He should have known better by that point in his life. He was 55 years old, and that's that. And luckily, he would be replaced by a Democrat, which, from Kate Harding's perspective, I honestly think that's the only thing you can care about in this situation.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see if there is more to this. And, you know, both things can be true. He could be guilty of what he's being accused of, and we could be seeing a sort of more sophisticated rollout than we have seen of other accusations in the past. But Heather, always appreciated. I'm sorry we have to talk under these circumstances. this is the era we're living in. Yes. Well, hope springs eternal.
Absolutely.
Digby, always a pleasure. Have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks so much.
You too. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking to... Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Michael, have you looked for a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Are you listening to a different show? Why did you just take your headphones off to listen to me?
I was checking a piece of sound. I do that from time to time. I didn't see a Jimmy Reefer Cake song. That's what you're...
Wow, that is awkward. I hope, Jamie, you caught that. You were able to do the camera switching in time to watch him take his headphones off actually talk to me.
No, actually, she didn't, because she was texting somebody else and also not listening to you.
My God.
Thank you.
Wow. Things are really going to change around here when those U tables show up. I can tell you that right now.
Wait, what's going on?
Oh, nothing. Don't worry about it, Michael. Go back to your sound check.
I was listening to a Chapo bit.
Right. No, I understand.
The one that matters is me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to Judy Gold. Just a reminder, folks, it is your support that makes this show possible. Become a member today. Join the Majority Report. It's very difficult to get good help these days, and any support you can give would be appreciated. Join themajorityreport.com. Quick break. Be right back with Judy Gold. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. You know, folks, each week I say, like, I've hit the brink. I can't take it anymore. It can't get any more messed up in this. How many different ways can this get messed up? I mean, what is it that I can take that will take the edge off? And the only thing that helps, ladies and gentlemen, put it into perspective, is to talk to someone who can't take it even more than me. And that is why I'm so happy to welcome back to the program the one, the only Judy Gold.
Hi, Sam.
Judy, you sound...
Yes, I can't fuck it. Hi.
You sound
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I am at my fucking boiling point here with this fucking asshole calling him Frankenstein. I mean, he is such a fucking piece of shit. First of all, Roy Moore is a fucking predator, a child molester. Al Franken did a stupid photo when he was a comic. This guy was a fucking judge. Fucking Donald Trump is a piece of living and breathing crap. I can't fucking take it. I can't take it. I can't take the hypocrisy, the fucking women that come out. I mean, there's women who are supporting Roy Moore. There are women that support him. And then the pastor, the one that's like, let me tell you some Jesus, and Jesus said this, and Jesus and Mary, and they're like, shut up!
I should just tell folks, hey, this next segment may be not safe for work.
Sorry. I'm at the end of my rope.
I'm
at the end of my rope with the fucking hypocrisy. And, like, the fact, he has no cred in the Department of Sexual Harassment, okay? None. Zero. And it's like Al Franken took a stupid picture, and now she's sleeping, and... Okay, you're a comic. How much stupid shit did we do on the road?
There's been pretty stupid. Let me put it this way. I'm glad that most of my that kind of work was done in a pre-digital age. Let me
yes.
put it that way.
Yes, that is true. Good point.
I am very, very happy because I also know that at that time I would have put stuff on YouTube that I would be very, very upset.
But what about Freaky
right.
Franken? Freaky Franken, folks. He's Frankenstein.
I mean,
super bad. Super, super bad.
They will do anything to take the focus off of their, like, bullshit, failing administration. He is, how dare he make any comment about someone sexually harassing women, okay? The other thing is, Franken, I mean, I'm torn about the Franken thing, because, like, you know, we have to, if we want those other fuckers to go, we should essentially say, okay, Al Franken should go. But you know what? He's been a champion to women. He's for women's rights. These guys fucking hate women. They hate their mothers. They hate women. They objectify them. They're fucking assholes. They're idiots. They're fake with the Bible crap. I'm so sick of the Jesus and Mary and Joseph bullshit. It's bullshit.
Judy, well, I have a question. Judy, mm-hmm. How could I hate women
what?
When I love my mom? Boom. Frankenstein. Freaky Franken. I don't think my sister shouldn't be raped. How about that? It's called feminism.
Judy.
More fucking people women have to come forward and say, you know, I was 9 and Roy Moore like came to my school and was like, let me take you home. I mean, like, he's a fucking asshole, predator, child molester, fuckhead.
He was a Democrat when he did that.
Yeah, he was. I mean, to be fair, he was a Democrat at the time.
He was?
That's supposedly
he was a registered Democrat, but you won't read that in the failing New York Times.
Oh, okay, let's forget it.
MS
Here's the other thing.
And lesbian C.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah?
Whenever they go to the Bible and are like, you know, they have some issue. Like, you know, anyone who, first of all, Pence is gay. I'm telling you right now, he's a homo. Okay?
I agree on that one.
Okay, he is a homosexual, and, you know, he's gay, 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 gay. Okay, so that's number one.
Right.
Anyone who's so anti anything, the hate,
Hold on, let me just.
Not articulate today because I can't fucking believe it. I can't fucking believe it.
Hold on, one second. Let me just play this to ease the tension.
Mom.
Okay, go.
Mom. Mom. Why did you do that to me?
That is a clip of one of the more famed gay therapy therapist, gay conversion therapist, taking a tennis racket and banging on a couch.
Is that true?
Yes. From years ago.
So, can I just
say, why don't we have, like, conversion of their fucking shitty personalities? Why don't they have that?
Let me
shitty personality conversion therapy.
Judy,
so,
have you done much work in Alabama? Have you gone? Have you done any stand up there?
I'm gonna tell you. I did. You know, I guess in the early '90s, late '80s, I had a gig at the University of Alabama. I got in the car. I'll never forget this. I got in the car. You know, because when you do a college, I think it was a lunchroom. It was like a shitty gig. Okay. So anyway, you know how when they pick you up in the car when you're doing a college, and then you have to drive 2 hours, and it's like a student that picks you up.
Yep.
And then you have to sit in the car with them for 2 hours and you want to kill yourself. So I'm in the car and we're driving, and I was like, they were like, oh, here's the, you know, I look at these gas stations and these, we were going through a rural area, and they said, oh, there's some of them still have the, you know, bathrooms that say colored in white. And I was like, I'm Jewish. So,
I think you know what that, like, means, Judy.
Then what happened? How did they look at you at that point?
I was just so fucked. I was scared. But they were a good crowd. But I was scared. It's just like...
Let me,
I don't know. This history of lynching and, you know... I just can't believe... That's your candidate? Some fucking asshole like that? And then...
Well, wait a second. I want to put up a graph that we have. I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay, put on the graph.
It is a poll from, I think it's a Fox News poll. It is the change in support for Moore and Jones from October to November. Okay?
Okay.
In October, Moore had 2% more men. It was about, I don't know, about 44% to 41%.
Right.
Jones had a plus 3 in terms of women. In other words, he had 3% more women were supportive of him than men. In November, Moore was up 7 points on men. Jones was up 23 points on women. But men in Alabama support more now than they did before.
What does that say? I mean, you're a guy. What is that? What does that say?
Hey, man, he he leveraged the DA spot.
I never thought he was a little bit extreme there, but I had no idea how pragmatic he was.
That's why every kid growing up wants to be DA for the girls. Literally, the girls.
That's a Borat poll.
Little ladies work here.
If I am district attorney, can I go to
know.
A school, please? He is district attorney, strong man.
Let me tell you something. The only time anyone called me at school and I got called out of my classroom was my mother when there was a fucking snowstorm and I was the first kid that had to leave because she was so paranoid. Judith Gold, can you please come to the office? Meanwhile, I live 6 houses from school and my mother's the first one to pick me up. Okay?
Don't be resentful because the DA didn't try to pick you up, Judy.
How many times I remember in my, you know, back in my 30s, did I get the old, I can't right now, I'm in trigonometry class. That's the...
You know, I had to cancel plans just last week because she had a pop quiz she was preparing for. So frustrating.
All right, but wait, let's just finish the conversation on Franken. It's not, obviously,
okay,
it's not just about the picture.
It's not just about the picture. I know it's making a statement. You know, it's standing by what we believe that, you know, he can't govern now because that picture,
with Franken, the issue is not the picture. The picture is, in the absence of the picture, I don't think that this would have as much traction, frankly, with just one woman. But the real issue, in my mind, I mean, is the charge that he shoved his tongue in this woman's mouth, you know, and grabbed her. That to me is the most problematic thing. The picture, I think, is probably more devastating because of the nature of our society. But the real problem from my perspective is this charge. And, you know, I've watched that video, the woman saying it, and it seems she seems pretty credible to me.
Right. I think you always have to believe the women. I do, you know, because it's so, you know, and I'm so sick of everyone saying, well, why did it take so long? You know, it's a scary situation that you can lose your job, you can lose your livelihood, you can lose a lot by coming forward. So yes, maybe he stuck his tongue down her throat. Yes, it was bad behavior. It's horrible. Okay. So he apologized. He's going to have them investigate him. Fine. Okay. This Roy Moore is a fucking pedophile, and Donald Trump has accusers coming after him, and he's commenting on it, and he can keep his job. Why can he keep his job? Why?
You know,
there's proof. We have proof of the fucking orange fuckface saying he grabs women's pussies. Why does he get to keep his job? Go.
He got elected. I mean, maybe Frank and she's run for...
Sometimes you're lucky. Look, if you're an inbred trust fund baby, sometimes things happen for you that work out well.
Maybe Frank and runs in the primary against Trump in 2020 for the Republican nomination.
I think I do a much better job of demeaning women Republican primary voters.
Exactly.
I mean, liberals also have higher standards for this stuff, to their credit.
That's Jamie. Right. Have you met Jamie?
Hi, Judy.
Hi, Jamie. Oh, you get to go in the studio. I don't.
Well, I mean,
I tweeted at you yesterday, but Judy, you tweeted
something. I'm in Cleveland.
Okay.
I'm in Cleveland.
It would be great if you came.
But
it would be awesome.
But Jamie's point is, you know, really the most salient one is that we have supposedly, this is what one of the things that, you know, establish us on the left as not being... you know, the Roy Moores of the world.
But he called Rush Limbaugh fat. It is very funny. Who cares if he don't kiss a girl?
You know, he's got to go in another room. I can't with him.
Oh.
Drop it.
Yeah, this whole, you're in your own little world right now. Can you please join in the conversation? Thank you.
Yeah, Michael.
Jamie, right?
Oh, that's very very cheap, Jamie.
I'm kidding. I love you. JK. All right, so
but also,
here's
make,
the thing.
Sorry.
Well, go ahead,
yeah,
Jamie.
Go, oh, Jamie.
Can
go.
I make another point about the graph and Roy Moore's increased support among men, mm-hmm. especially? I was reading an article. I forget where it was. Maybe it was Salon. They made some good points about how Moore's behavior with this girl is actually pretty consistent with things that are normalized in the culture of evangelical homeschoolers, in that girls are supposed to live with their fathers until they get married, and they're supposed to get married young, often to an older man, because it guards their sexual purity from ever having anything going on outside of the bounds of their role as a wife and a mother under God.
Right.
And it is their fault, in fact, for being temptresses as well.
Yes, that as well. So it's like very normalized in this evangelical culture. It's not like common. Oh, was there? I think Sarah Jones was talking about it on your show.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not that out of the question in that specific context.
He has the right morals, Judy.
This whole evangelical, you know, Bible stuff, and yet they support Trump and Moore and they hate the gays because, you know, we fucking have destroyed everything, you know, it is beyond ridiculous. I can't fucking deal with it anymore. It's like, I want to punch the TV and like that fucking idiot tweets, like, how the fuck does he... He has no self-awareness. And this culture of little girls and, you know, the men. It's disgusting. It is so fucking disgusting. I can't fucking deal with it anymore. I can't take the bullshit. Meanwhile, he's in bed with the Russians. His hotel in Panama is you know, all in embedded with the Russian mob. I mean, what the fuck?
Well, let me ask you this. Judy, what? Are you paying any attention to the tax deal at all? I mean, I saw a tweet that...
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's really a good...
But,
oh,
I mean,
my God, I can't wait to pay more. I mean, it's, like, unbelievable. No one reads in this country. These people voted for him because, you know, he's going to champion the little guy. I guess it's actually they're going to champion the little girl. I guess that's what they're championing.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, that was good, Judy.
I didn't get that one, but I'm in my own world.
Well, all
right, I'm sorry.
You hurt Michael.
Yes, you did. You did.
Michael, I'm sorry. But I couldn't even understand what you were saying.
That's fair. I understand. You're right.
Michael, I'm sorry. Right. When I get there, we'll hug.
We will.
And you can molest me.
That's okay.
You can grab
I was homeschooled.
Yeah.
You were?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, you got to cut me some slack.
He's not used to being in a classroom with other people.
That's right. Just,
yeah,
that's
right here.
Right. I was listening to books on tape.
Mommy's going to call on me, I bet. I get called on all the time at school.
Well, I was actually neglected, but that's okay. Great, great humor, Sam.
Yeah.
Well, Judy, the upside is it seems like every time we talk on this program,
I don't think it can get worse. And
it does.
It's like...
And it's different.
It's just unbelievable.
Isn't it different, though? Doesn't it feel like each week it's a different flavor of horror?
It's something you can't even imagine. Like... You can't make this shit up. Like, I don't think it's going to get any worse. I really believe, oh, they're going to get him. Oh, Roy Moore. It's obvious this. It's obvious that. Like, it's like we're living in a country with two different kinds of people. And it's ridiculous. Like, and we haven't even discussed all the fucking, you know, shootings that have happened. It's like, there's so much. It's like, what do you cover? What do you talk about? The fact that there's no gun control, that you know, little kids are killed and no one gives a fuck. But when little kids are molested, you know, no one even gives a fuck. I mean, I can't believe that we're even talking. Remember Bill Clinton? Everyone's like, oh, my God. Oh, with the blowjob and everything. I can't believe the shit we talk about now.
Yeah.
Like, I remember parents were like,
that
you
was
know,
the bigger thing.
God,
what are we going to tell the children?
What, a blow job
what
is.
Are we going to tell the children? What are we going to tell
what
them?
What do you
and
tell your children,
like,
Judy?
What did I tell my
children? What, no, now. Like, what do you tell them?
I actually said to Ben, we were having dinner. Henry's in college, so I wasn't having dinner with him. But anyway.
I hope you told Ben. Table, like, I hope you told him that if the DA ever calls him at school, just to hang up on him.
Ben is 6'7", okay? So no one's fucking... You know,
right? No one tells him.
I told him this is not normal. I say this is not normal. You know, this is not our country. This didn't happen when I was growing up. There weren't like these, you know, mass murders with the guns and everyone talking about their dicks and sexually harassing. Like, this is just not normal behavior. It's not normal. Let me just say something. They can all quote the Bible, but I'm pretty sure that Jesus Christ fucking hates Roy Moore. I'm pretty sure of that, okay?
Don't you think that people were whipping out their dicks? I mean, don't you think the sexual harassment, to the extent that it wasn't...
It's going on, yes. Yeah. It was going on for a long time, and now it's coming out, okay? But don't deny it. You know, like, it's that they just deny it.
Well, they deny it. I mean... Remember, like, Bob Packwood Clarence Thomas? And we're just talking about the 90s. I mean, prior to that, maybe women weren't allowed to
what
go into the
Gary
workplace.
What about Gary Hart?
Right.
What about Gary Hart?
But that was just an
affair.
Well,
Gary
right?
Hart was just having an affair.
Right. And that's right. And now that would be like, oh, all right, he's just having an affair.
Right. Well, yes.
What about who was Bob Packwood?
What about the one who went away?
Bob Packwood was like a senator. Sanford. Mark Sanford.
Yeah, Mark Sanford. Yeah.
Well, he's back in Congress.
Oh, that dude, that was romantic.
Yes.
Like, fell in love with another. That was like romantic. The least offensive of any of these, right?
Right.
I mean, he's a terrible person, like, but that's a different thing.
Also, I want to know, why do guys think that anyone wants to see their dicks? Seriously. Why do you assume that everyone wants you to whip your dick out, you know?
I honestly have been walking around asking, like, honestly, I got to tell you, like, the question I've been asking all of my friends is like, well, I just don't understand, like, what is the idea of just sort of forcing someone to watch you masturbate or to masturbate in a plant? Like, where is the even remote enjoyment in that?
Well, I think the thing that gets them off is that they don't want to see it, and they know that.
Right. It's that the woman's uncomfortable, and they have even more power over that. You know, it's so weird. And, you know, you wonder, and then you look at this culture we're in where people are, you know, don't believe you, and they harass you, and they vilify you for coming out and saying something, and then you wonder why people don't come out and say something. Right. I mean, 50 women came out against Bill Cosby. 50! And people are still like, oh, I don't know if you did it. He fucking did it, you fucking asshole! Hello?
Hello.
I so bad.
I mean, have you been out to LA? Are you talking to people in comedy about like more fallout in terms of Louie?
Sam, I'm in New York. There's a comedy scene in New York. I know that you've abandoned it.
I know.
I haven't been in LA, but I have been in New York, and I was at the Cellar the night the Louie came out, the Louie thing came out. And I opened my show with, hey guys, how's everyone doing tonight? Do you guys mind if I masturbate in front of you? So then, and then, you know, the audience is like, ooh, and I'm like, oh my God, we're all thinking it. So shut the fuck up. You know, it's like, I have to get it out of the way.
Sarah Silverman talked about it on her Hulu show by saying, I've got to address the masturbating elephant in the room.
Right.
Which I thought was pretty good.
It's funny. But it you know, for me as a female comic who's put up with this shit forever, you know, because look, but it's every woman in every industry except like nursing and teaching, you know? But
teaching, you only have to put up with it from your male principal. Who's I mean, I imagine.
But when the GA shows up, they're like, get out of my way.
Right, exactly.
I'd like to talk to your students, please.
But it's also look at the Catholic Church, and everyone's like, why'd they wait so long? And here's my other thought. You know, like, there's a statute of limitations on this. There's no statute of limitations on the effect it has on the people.
Right.
I mean, they're you know, marred and wounded for the rest of their lives. And these fucking assholes are like, I'm sorry, I'm going to go to Jesus now, and he's going to fucking save me. No, he's not. You're still an asshole. Even if you go to church every day, you're still a fucking asshole if you do this shit to people. You know what I mean? It's, like, ridiculous. I can't take it anymore. I really, you know. So, anyway, back to the comedy world. So, I've noticed, like, a lot of guys are, like, upset that he got caught or that their hero, you know, is falling, you know. I don't know. It's so weird because, you know, I've talked to other guys in the business. One guy said to me, well, you know, when a girl dresses, like, really provocatively, don't they want a guy to hit on them? So... And I'm like, look, I'm not one for showing, you know, like walking around with your tits hanging out and your ass hanging out. But why do you assume that's for you? You know what I mean?
Right.
What about pigtails?
Yeah, that's good. Like, or like Pippi Longstocking hair.
Also, no one's complaining about getting hit on either.
Right. That's the thing. You know.
Well, different people have different techniques. Some people are like, hey, how you doing? What's your favorite food? And other people are like, hey, here's my penis. I mean, that's
right.
The first one was also bizarre, Sam.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You want to build a rapport with somebody. It's been a long time since I've
because like all of your flirting that you still even get is like barista based or something. Is that what's going on?
No, I don't even get that. I get my coffee.
But it's also like, you know, there's this shit. You're in this stupid situation. All right, number one, let's get rid of this whole why did she go to his hotel room or why did she go here? Because you know as well as I, when you're a comic and you're on the road, that's your home.
Of course.
That's where you hang out. You know, so cut the shit. And people are like, oh, why are they?
Well, if you're also, it's Aspen. If you're going to go get high, you're not going to go outside. You're going to go up into a hotel room. No, of course.
Right. That's where we hang out, you know? So that's number one. Number two is when someone pulls their dick out and they start masturbating and it's like, why didn't they leave? It's like, you're in shock. Okay. Go back to your life and the things that you kept thinking, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. Okay. And the guy's powerful. He's like head writer on shows. He's someone you like admire. He's someone, you know, you think you can network with. And all he wants to do is pull his dick out. I mean, that's sad, you know? But then we have, you know, other guy comics saying he lied to me. He didn't tell me. I didn't know. I knew. I mean, I had heard the stories. So if I had heard the stories, I'm pretty sure all these other people had heard the stories, too.
You had heard stories like that?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's, I mean, I wonder, because I certainly was like aware that, you know, and maybe it was just like he said it on stage about, you know, sort of,
right.
You know, fairly what I would consider somewhat pervy behavior, but not
right.
of that, not ones that forced that were, you know, like coercive or, you know. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, I can't really tell what parts I know from him on stage, or maybe he had told me, but it wasn't that. It wasn't stuff that I was like, right. Oh, yeah, I do that too, but it was not stuff like that, where it was, you know, sort of like forcing yourself on someone.
Right. But the thing is like, that's the other thing when you're a stand-up, is like, you get on stage and you tell intimate shit about yourself, you know, and then people think they know you.
Right.
You know, and they don't. They don't know you. And we're comics, so we make jokes about our, you know, our fodder is our life and our experiences and our opinions and our point of view. So if you're spending your day mostly masturbating, of course you're going to write jokes about how you masturbated all day. And a lot of guys, like a lot of guys now, younger comics, all they talk about is porn, you know? So apparently that's all they do all day. But it's like, where do you draw the line? Is it a joke or is it, you know, it's your action. So, I mean, that's why Al Franken's in trouble, because here we have evidence.
Yep.
Like tangible evidence of him acting like an idiot, you know? But these girls that have been in this situation where they're like, oh, what do I do? They go to Dave Becky. Dave Becky's like, shut the fuck up, because money, 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 and you're going to destroy his career. And yet then they don't apply for jobs on shows. Then, you know, the powerful manager or agent is like, oh, no, I don't want to go near that person. You know, it's really bad. It's a bad thing. And
women
comics have it tough. Yeah.
I'm surprised Becky has not gotten in more trouble about this.
I agree with you 500%. That's the thing. It's like, he's the one that told them to shut the fuck up.
We should just tell people that Dave Becky is from Three Arts. He was Louis's manager. And he, you know, like, I don't know. It's hard to know what the conversation was between Louie and Becky.
Right. Or if there was a conversation.
Or if there was even a conversation. I mean,
right.
We know
there was a conversation between Becky and the girls.
And,
you know?
And that is like the, that is, that to me is just sort of straight out economic coercion. And I mean, that to
right.
me, that shit, that that's, that is, I'm just really surprised that there hasn't been more blowback on that, to be honest with you.
And Louis really right. made excuses for him too, in his garbage apology.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, look, Pam Adlon left him. But no one else, I mean, no one else has left him. It's like this.
Left Becky.
Yeah.
Pam Adlon is, she was in Lucky Louie, and she was in Louie's show.
And she has, right, but she also has her show Better Things, and Louie's the EP.
Yep.
You know, the thing about Louie is, he did give women jobs, you know? He was a champion of women, female comics. I mean, he wasn't, and then he did the shitty thing, you know? Yep. But it's like, as a female comic, okay, and I, you know, I'm never the one, I never was like, oh, it's because I'm a woman, it's because I always just wanted to be a good comic. That's it. But it is harder for us, and we do have to deal with all this shit. And if there were more women in powerful positions like Louis was in, or, you know, had their own shows and, you know, had these great things happen for them, maybe we'd see this other point of view, but we never see this other point of view. It's rare. I mean, even in stand-up, it's like we've seen the white, angry white guy point of view. We know, oh, you're really so horrible. Your wife's an asshole. Right. You know, you just want to watch the game. Oh, I got to go jerk off and this and that. Okay. You know, maybe if you saw the world through these other, you know, given shows to people with other, you know, points of view, you would understand more. Like, you know, you look at the sitcoms that we grew up with, like All in the Family.
Yes.
Okay. There were different points of view on that fucking sitcom. That, you know, Mary Tyler Moore, there was a single woman who wasn't married, didn't have kids, and worked. The Jeffersons, Good Times. There was all these shows that at that time let the world know, or opened up the world or our country to other people and their lifestyles, you know? And it's just, we're inundated by these like white guys on stage at these comedy clubs. Like three white guys is a show, you know, three women on a show is a special event. And it's ridiculous. It shouldn't be a special event. It should just be three fucking comics on a show.
You know, and I would add, not only would it make a difference in terms of like the perspective of the entertainment, but also if there were more women comics and frankly, you know, more women managers, Becky making that threat, that implicit or explicit threat to these women
right.
wouldn't be as devastating. I mean, to me, there's sort of a quality of this of like there was a debt that was built up. And
right.
and interest has accrued significantly
right.
on that debt.
Right.
And it is, I mean, this is, you know, a, sort of a clinical way of putting this. And it's obviously more nuanced and more emotional. But in terms of like, at least from an economic perspective, you know, the idea of going around and excluding people from the, you know, comedy marketplace was basically
right.
imposing Louis's externalities on them, and
right.
and women suffered across the board, and this accrued.
Right.
And you know, the fact of the matter is, 15, 20 years later, you can't get back into it. You know, it's like, you know,
right.
you are where you are at this point in your career, and
right.
you're not going to get that
and
back.
It's so, and you think about all these women. Like I was on Alan Cox's show yesterday. Radio show here in Cleveland. And we were talking about all these women who were so, you know, were really doing well in the 90s. Where the fuck are they now? All these female comics. Like, where's Margaret Smith? You know,
right.
Diane Ford. Like, all these guys that were just like, I can't take it anymore. You can't, it's like, and now, you know, I just turned 55. Thanks, guys. I know I look great. But,
you know, oh, happy birthday! You know what?
Thank
I think
you.
You share a birthday with Brendan. Brendan, who's working here now. I think you guys share a birthday with each other.
15th, November 15th.
That deserves a show far.
Happy birthday.
All right, well, you're going to get one of these.
Thanks. Whatever.
Have you never heard that? Have I never given you a shit for? Are you kidding?
Oh my God, that's hilarious. sounds like a shofar.
It is.
Tequila.
It is a shofar.
Oh my God. Wait, can I do the tequila? Tequila.
There you go. I mean, it's not. It's Thanksgiving.
Okay, that was Trua. That's
right. That was a tequila de Godola.
All right. But you know, you think about all these women. Oh yeah, I just converted. It's just weird. I mean, I feel like, you know, I've said this 100 times, but it's like I'm 55, and I'm having a hard time getting a special on the air because I'm 55, right? Yep. And but there's plenty of fucking guy comics who are 55, and they can get a special on. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because I'll tell you now, it's not because I'm not funny, and it's not. I mean, I'm out four or five nights a week doing stand-up. I love being a stand-up. I work on my, you know, like it's something I fucking love doing, and I'm really good at it. So. You know, it's just like, why does, you know, humor have a demographic? It doesn't, you know, funny is funny. And Joan Rivers was never more relevant than when she was 82 years old. I mean, so shut the fuck up.
Well, that stuff has always been bullshit in my estimation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's always been a marketing thing. Like, we're going to hit the kids. We're going to get the key demo.
Right, right.
And what's the way that we can show that we're going to do this? Well, we're going to get people that age, too. And that never worked. We didn't watch people that age when we were younger.
Right.
Everybody we watched was older than us.
Right, exactly. It's just like,
but it's harder for women
so
in that
stupid.
Respect, I think. I mean, self-evidently, it's harder for women in that respect. But
right. And it's stupid. It's a stupid way of doing business, you know, because I have an audience and they spend money and they want to laugh. And, you know, there's some people, they've been doing stand-up for like, you know, a few years. They have some funny YouTube video and then they get booked in a club. And they can't do 45 minutes.
Yep.
You know, they can't headline a show. But for those four or five shows that they were there, they were packed because people knew them from YouTube. And they get the spot instead of the comic who's been working for years and years and has a great act, you know?
Well, let's do a YouTube channel, Judy.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
All right. Well, Judy, look.
Hate everyone. No, you're leaving?
Well, no, you told me you got another phone thing.
I know, but that's not till 1.
Oh.
I like whining and complaining.
We got a couple more minutes.
I have to have lunch in Cleveland. I don't know where the fuck to eat.
Oh, go to the Cleveland lunch place. Cleveland House. Cleveland House. Go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, there's a place called... There's a place called Happy Dog where you can get a hot dog with, like, everything on it.
Oh, good. And then I can fart through the hotel. That'll be great.
Yeah.
And have diarrhea. Yeah, that's great.
Good job, Jamie.
Wow, that's...
Told Judy.
Or don't.
Jamie told Judy to get diarrhea today on the show. That was weird.
Yeah. oh, my God. I don't know what to do. It's like I wake up. I'm like, what happened?
Well, look,
what happened?
Judy,
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Here's the good news. Here's the good news. We have passed the year-long mark since Donald Trump was elected. We only have three more years of this, if we're lucky.
Do you think it's going to be another 3 years? Go.
Do I think he's going to win another term?
No. Do you think he's going to last 3 years?
I mean, I would say there's an 80 to 90% chance. I mean, I think, like, and I would say that other 10 to 20% chance is really more of a medical situation. I mean, I don't think he's going to be. He is. I will say this: he will not be impeached.
How does he not have colon cancer?
If he gets impeached, it will happen in 2021 or 2022. He will not be impeached before 2020.
I just can't believe that we've impeached people with less shit.
Not in the first term.
Not if you, impeachment in the first term, I think, is probably, right. Well, certainly in the modern era.
One got an impeached for Iran.
Do you not think that? What about Who all did? The lying and colluding? Right. What? Say that again?
Oh, Michael said no one got impeached for Iran-Contra. No, no, not even remotely.
Yeah, that's,
and that's pretty big.
Ollie North actually got a whole career out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
He's very boring.
How about how much do you want to punch Paul Ryan in the fucking face?
Yes.
I don't know if, I mean, are you allowed to say that, but yes.
No, it's a desire. It's not an intention.
Oh,
no, it's a desire. I'm not going to, but I'm just saying, like, he's just one of those guys. I would want to,
but, you know, when I look at those pictures of him, and all he does, it seems like he spends like 90% of his time working out, it seems.
Working out, right.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't,
you know, there's an issue there. If he's in the gym all the time working on his body, he's got some issues, okay? Just letting you know that.
Maybe.
You know, and how much, what about the elephants? We didn't even talk about the elephants.
Oh, yeah. So the Trump administration rolled back an Obama era a regulation that you could not import. You could not bring home lion and elephant trophies after you've killed them.
Right. Like ivory and all that. Yeah.
Like, oh, here, I brought back an elephant ear. I got the foreskin from this elephant that I shot.
Right.
And, oh, look at that. We have a picture of one of the world's greatest douchebags with an elephant's tail, I guess, that he has cut off. The knife is in his hand. Oh, my God.
Right.
What a horrible human being.
Ugh. Let me just say something. His dick must be fucking inverted. Okay, that he needs to fucking stand there with an elephant tail. Okay,
it's just don't understand.
It's like, what do you get? I don't understand. Like, what? I understand, like, hunting and game and all that shit. Like, what do you get from killing an endangered species and then taking pictures? You're a fucking asshole. You are a fucking asshole. Okay. They're fucking assholes.
I am totally with you. I have a lot of friends who will hunt a deer a year, and then they'll end up eating it. And, you know, I don't know that I could do that necessarily, but but I totally, I mean, I understand it. It's not, you know, I used to fish a lot, and, you know, but to do that is just like, ooh.
Oh, my God. Did you just say I used to fish a lot?
Yeah, I used to fish when I was younger.
You did?
Yeah.
That's so not Jewy.
Well, you know, Judy, there's a lot about me that you don't know that I think is not that Jewy.
Who did you fish with?
My dad.
His Rebbe.
My
really?
Rabbi. My rabbi. My moil. I'd have my moil bait my hook, as it were.
Did you make sure they had... fins and wait, what a fish!
We would fish for gefilte fish, of course.
Oh yeah, they're roaming around a lot up in Massachusetts. Yeah,
I did a little like gefilte trout fishing, and you know.
Did you fish for like horseradish too with beets in it?
Of course. Judy,
I honestly
gotta go
because you're hanging up on me now.
We're ending the show early today, and so
why?
Well, I gotta do a Bob's Burger table read.
You do?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Why can't I get a fucking table read?
Well, I mean, it's we could do a table read. We could do a table read of your new YouTube show.
Okay, what's my new YouTube show?
Well, we can't. Listen, we just came up with the idea of doing a YouTube show and a table read. We can't expect everything
come
out at the one time.
Wait, so who are you playing on Bob's Burgers?
I play a couple of different characters, Judy. Did you not know that I was Hugo and Harold?
No.
I've been Hugo since
the
pilot.
I need to be on Bob's
I was in the
Burgers.
Pilot.
Oh man, I gotta get a I gotta get a fucking animation job.
They are it's pretty good.
The best. They're the best. And I do all these voices. Fuck, you better get me a job there.
I'll put a word in for you. I can't believe they never brought
all
you.
All right, yeah. Yeah, whatever. You only care about yourself.
That's
all
true.
Right.
Only me.
Even
only
with your
me.
Fishing.
It's all about
still
you.
Bully
all right,
you like
I'm gonna go
Jew.
Find the
Judy.
Lunch place.
Thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, I feel so much better every time I talk to you. I mean, it doesn't last long, but I do.
I'm going to have a fucking, I'm going to have a heart attack from this motherfucker. All right.
Well, hang in there. Take care of yourself. I love you very much.
All right. I
got to
go grab some pussy.
All right.
All right.
Bye. Enjoy. Good luck to everybody. Watch out, Cleveland. You're about to get your pussy grabbed.
She said it.
All right, we do have just a moment left. They're not going to have time for calls, but we'll be back on Monday. We'll be here live Monday and Tuesday. We're going to do. Let's do the Jamie Johnson. Okay. Because this guy is so indicative. I mean, we just have a backlog of clips of various types of racists, ranging from like stars of the conservative media to. Oh, I don't know. The community outreach guy from the Department of Homeland Security. What community do you think this guy is reaching out to? Here's a hint. It's not the non-white one.
Let me ask the both of you. A lot of blacks are anti-Semitic. Why?
I think one of the reasons why is because Jewish people from their... coming to America in great waves in the early part of the 1800s, immediately rolled up their sleeves and began to work so hard and applied themselves to education and other means of improvement and other means of climbing the, I hate this phrase, but the social ladder, if you will. And they have done exceptionally well for themselves. For only representing about 1.4% of America's population, they make up 12% of America's millionaires. Why? Because they work. And it's an indictment of America's black community that has turned America's major cities into slums because of laziness, drug use, and sexual promiscuity.
I'll tell you why we hate white people.
Hold on for a second. This is... He's resigned now, because apparently you're not supposed to say this out loud when you're appointed to the director of the Department of Homeland Security Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnership. Can you believe this?
Well, as I always say, yes.
Now, let me say, I totally appreciate his words about the Jewish community.
I thought it was very, I thought it was, there's
community.
No need to frame positive comments in contrast to negative ones, but the positive comments were very appreciated.
This is just, it's just, I mean, you know, the guy's on the radio. This is not hidden camera. This is not like, it's not hidden microphone.
It's an Asaf Mavi moment.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that we can hear you, right?
You know that you're being broadcast. The guy was on, what, Right Balance on Accent Radio Network. Now, to be fair, this is 2008. This is before he was in the government.
Can we say key, like clutch line from that, though, is, and I hate this phrase. After litany of racism.
Yes. I hate to use the term social ladder. But now let me talk about how blacks have turned everything into the slums.
Here's some phrases I
love. Oh my God.
Phrases I dig. Like, black people are either genetically or culturally inferior.
Now,
research will tell.
Now, I know there's a lot of people out there. They hear that clip of the now former head of the Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships in the Department of Homeland Security. What's his name? Jamie Johnson. Jamie Johnson. So Jamie Johnson had gone on to that show, The Right Balance, on Accent Radio Network to praise Jews for not being blacks. And essentially...
Nailed it. Except for the Ethiopian one.
Right. Can't. How come the Jews were able to do it when they came over? He was always, he was so close too. Like they came over here in waves in 1830s. What was good? Wait. Oh, that's so. All right, but to be fair, it's not just black people that Jamie Johnson has a problem with.
He also has a problem with brown people.
Folks, we're talking with author and historian Bill Federer. We're going to continue this conversation talking about Islam. I never call it radical Islam. If anything, it is obedient Islam. It is faithful Islam. Just in the same way, Bill, that we talk about nominal Christians, and we never say that as a compliment. You're either a faithful and committed Christian, committed to the teachings and writings of the law and the prophets and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, or you're just kind of wishy-washy. And what the media and what, sadly, too many people in our camp, the Republican Party, want to refer to as militant or radical Islam, they're simply being obedient, aren't they?
Yeah, there he goes. Oh, and I should say, he was filling in as for the host. So
to say this phrase, but
so he definitely knew he was on the radio. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm right in front of this microphone.
The head of faith-based and neighborhood partnerships.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we just handled, what we did is we had our budget cut, so we just decided to focus on a couple of neighborhoods.
Like, yeah, neighborhoods in the sense of like how Indira Gandhi had a neighborhood policy in the 1970s.
Right. We're just going to focus on a couple of them.
Also, Sam Harris co-signs that.
Yep.
All right, look, we have just one more moment. I want to cover this because it's, you know, next week is Thanksgiving, obviously, and then after that, it's the Christmas season. I've got some bad news for you folks. Of course, we've been waiting for the war on Christmas to start. Guess what? Maybe I shouldn't phrase this as bad news. I should phrase this as good news because it looks like we won. We won.
I've been shopping for Christmas ornaments about Jesus. I'm not anti-Santa Claus. I just don't want him in my face every minute because it's the birthday of Jesus Christ.
Or you don't want the holiday tree. You want a Christmas tree.
I do.
Right?
And I want to be able to. They outlawed Merry Christmas a few years ago, and you know it.
But you know, Jim,
you couldn't even say Merry Christmas at Walmart. And the Walmart greeters told me they weren't allowed to say it. Well, but we all started writing. And what did we do? We changed it.
Yes.
We changed it. We all worked together. You don't have to lay down for it.
There you go. Jim Baker claiming that the Merry Christmas was outlawed. And that, of course, was the Walmart Can't Say Merry Christmas Act of
in our corporate feudalist future, that Walmart policy will be sort of like law on all of us.
Hi, this is Murray Scheinbaum from the Walmart Anti-Christmas Coalition.
Jesus. Oh God. All right, folks. Freebie Friday. We will be back Monday. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Check out TMBS on our YouTube channel or on iTunes, the Michael Brooks Show. Don't forget, Just Coffee, MR Holiday. I already got a text from Film Guy Matthew, and I'll read it because we just got 1 second here left. Here it goes. I went nuts on Just Coffee's 30% off. Tried a bunch of new blends and, of course, re-upped my 5-pound bag of MR Blend. It's MR Holiday for 30% off at justcoffee.coop. All right, folks, see you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.